Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is November 7th, 2013. And tonight's main science topic, rather interesting discovery that I found this week. I just happened to flip open none other than the Colbran, which is a conglomeration of ancient texts. And I got to something that comes from the Scrolls of Adipha, the Scroll of Adipha, which is a name of an ancient writer, Adipha. And so what I'm going to do, and of course that's in translated from Latin, directly translated from Latin, and I suspect it goes all the way back through Greek and probably through other languages prior to that. Many of our words in English today are actually true Latin words. I took 4 years of Latin in high school, so I'm very familiar with Latin. In fact, we used to speak in Latin, which was rather interesting. I'm not sure if the Romans would have understood us very well, but maybe with an American accent. But yeah, we used to speak in Latin. And et tu, Brute. More than that, we used to speak conversation after 4 years of Latin. Anyway, the point here is that this description of a planet X-type object. And now, in the past, I've said that you will see Planet X as a comet. But, and then I always qualify it and I say, but a raging comet. And of course, but what I want to do tonight is to get into some real live descriptions. And we'll start out by looking at what the ancients talked about. And then I'll go through and describe what exactly they are seeing and why they are seeing it. And of course, they didn't understand. They even make the comment that it doesn't look like a normal comet. And, of course, they didn't understand what these objects were out there or what was going on. And prior to the Middle Ages, remember that people thought that comets were a fire in the atmosphere. So you have to look through their eyes, through their perceptions, through their thought patterns of what these were. And they thought that these things were in the atmosphere, that they were associated with Earth, because that was their perspective. You have to understand this, so you have to go back into their mind to interpret this. Anyway, that will be the main science topic. Really, really interesting material. Okay, and first of all, many announcements tonight. First of all, this week, these are things, I have so many releases that are actually backed up on the shelves. There's like a stack of shelves of things that are ready to release, and of course I can't release them all at the same time. So this past week, and in preparing for Christmas, remember that over the past 5 shows or so, going back to the beginning of October, I have been prepping my audience for a new release, and I will do some more of that tonight. So that's going to happen Christmas Day. In fact, we're waiting to actually send out after Christmas, so you will not get that at Christmas. That it will not be, and it's just because of timing. The mail is too convoluted and too difficult to. And if people order it and think it's for Christmas and it's for a Christmas present, then they're upset when somebody doesn't get it. And so to avoid all of that, we will send it out. It will actually be released Christmas Day. And so, anyway, that's kind of my Christmas present. But there is a current release that is out now and available. And this is something that happened about a year ago. I was contacted by the program in Japan, the equivalent of the 60 Minutes program in the United States. We all know about 60 Minutes with the crew, and they have 3 topics, 20 minutes each, to cover an hour. And these are topics that they pick, and they have a film crew that goes out and films and records and studies these topics. And then they present them from a critical point of view so that it's information for the public. It's not politicized. It's they try and get to the core issues and open it up for the public's eyes. Anyway, Japan has a show exactly like that. And they got a hold of me as the premier person to discuss Planet X. They also interviewed a friend of mine, John Moore. But anyway, here's what happened. In my interview, which was separate, these were separate, they came to me, and we set up in a studio, in basically my studio loft, and recorded 3.5 hours of, it was very intensive. And they just kept going and going and going. The main producer from this show came and interviewed me. So the woman who coordinated everything, she said, this is very unusual for the main producer to come out and actually conduct the interview. So I was very honored for this whole operation. This was then edited and put on national Japanese television. And that has already occurred. But during the filming, I set up my own equipment. It was in my studio. I had my own equipment there. And so I did a high-definition DVD filming of the entire interview over 3 hours. And this I made available. I cut a DVD. And this is now available. And the name of the topic of the DVD is What Do the Japanese Want to Know About Planet X? Now, understand that the Japanese mindset is somewhat different than Americans. They have not heard about Planet X. They have not seen all the nutcase stuff about Planet X. So this was a great opportunity to give them a fresh, new view of the whole topic of Planet X. They didn't have NASA breathing down their throat with all the baloney, phony baloney that comes out of NASA, and all the disinformation crew. They didn't have any of that. So this was a wonderful opportunity for me to give the country of Japan a fresh, new, and a view of the entire topic of Planet X. So anyway, you want to see what the Japanese want to know about Planet X and all of the questions that they brought. And this is from, as I said, now in the video, there's a woman who's interpreting. She asks me the question, and then she explains it to the producer, just kind of briefly, because then they went back in their studio and then basically took this 3.5 hours apart in great detail. And so you'll see the woman interviewing me, asking me a question, and then the producer explaining something to him, and then he comes back with another question in Japanese. He doesn't speak a word of English. And so the interpreter is working between me and the producer. And they have the film crew there and a couple other staff members. Okay, so anyway, that is now released. That's available. I believe it's $13.95 plus $3 shipping, $2.80 shipping. So it's $16.75 if you order one. And if you order two of them, you get free shipping for $25, two of these DVDs. And so anyway, I'm very excited about this because I put it up yesterday for sale, and already it's selling very, very well. Also, the new release, I'm actually pre-selling it for $19.95, or the same situation, you can buy two of them. I think it's $36 in free shipping for two of them. But that's the one that will be released at Christmas, but of course it won't be available until Christmas. But you can buy them both today, or you can get both of these new releases for free if you buy more than $295 worth of any list of products on the webpage. And so it gives people an opportunity to get something for free, plus get some great water filter products or my books, our other items on the webpage. Okay, so enough of that. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, for details. Okay, and I'll tell you, in that interview, just to give you a little side note here, it was a lot of fun, because I knew that this was something important to the Japanese people, the whole country of Japan. And they told me, they said, this is not something that really had been heard about on the street in Japan and people on the internet. Japan has a very different culture in the way they get information. They read little short books on their telephones, but this program is the most watched program in Japan. It's like everybody watches it. Not almost everybody. Everybody watches it. So it was really thrilling for me to do the interview, to interact. And then we went out and we had lunch with the producer and the whole staff. And we really, I got to know these people. It was just absolutely wonderful. And to have that international communication on such an important topic. So anyway, just a little side note there. On with the rest of the show here. You can tell I'm excited about that. And by the way, it's just I got to see the perspective of what did the Japanese people want to know about Planet X? What was their perspective? What were their questions? What were they thinking? What was it, the psyche of the Japanese public? And it was just a wonderful experience. Anyway, that is available, over 3-hour DVD, the uncut version of that interview. So, okay, that's on my webpage, jmccsci.com. Go there and check that out. I just want to also do a little promo here, and this is something actually that John Moore kind of started a number of weeks ago. He said, John, I was interviewed every week on Wednesday morning on John Moore's show in 6 a.m. Republic Radio. And John said one day, Jim, explain that calendar device because he really likes it. And so I explained to him the emergency survival Sunstar clock. The emergency survival recalendar Sunstar clock is the official name of this item. And it's something that I worked on for years. I went through iterations, various different combinations of trying to make a product that was easy to use, encompassed all of our information regarding the sun, the stars, and a clock and a calendar, and that could be used any place on Earth, including the Southern Hemisphere, which is difficult. Many times things work in the Northern Hemisphere but don't in the Southern Hemisphere. Many of the astrolabe products of old are very complicated to use, very difficult, and not very accurate. So I had a big order. This historically clocks and calendars and time. Through the Middle Ages is when they developed the clocks for navigation. They needed accurate timepieces for navigation, because you can get your latitude relatively easily by shooting stars with your sextant, but the time and the date was very difficult to manage. And so I had a big order when I designed this timepiece. And it comes down to a single tablet, almost indestructible, on an 8.5 by 11 piece of almost indestructible material. It's printed on there, and then it comes with a set of bolts and other accessories to allow you to recreate the time, the calendar, and project a calendar into the future for hundreds of years into the future, to know when the planting seasons are, to know when to harvest. And also it gives all of the information about our orbit in the solar system, so that if one of these is dug up in the future, say in 5,000 years, say that a Planet X object comes through, destroys Earth, gives us a big pole shift, the Earth is thrown out of its current orbit, they could take this tablet and come back and say, this is where Earth was before all of that. And can you imagine if we had something like that, a timepiece that would give us that information about prior to the previous pole shift, when Venus came through, etc. And the calendar, we could reconstruct the ancient calendar. All of that can be done with this tablet. But as far as you're concerned, you can take this as it is, set it up in your front window or the southern exposure window in your house, and put it on a table, and your kids can learn. It'd be a super Christmas present. The you set it up, and within minutes you will know the time and the date accurately, and you can watch the sun as it works through the calendar year as it changes. And all of this is on this one tablet. You can set this up any place in the world in a matter of minutes, and you can create the clock and the calendar using the sun and the stars. And so you can coordinate the sun with the stars, etc. So it's a truly amazing device. It's $39.95 plus, I think, $4.95 shipping. And if you buy two of them for like $79, you get free shipping. So anyway, I'm just doing a little promo of this because here's what happened. When John kind of mentioned it on a show, I gave a little description, and all of a sudden, people started ordering and then telling other people, and I got the feedback that people, once they see it, they show their friends and then they order it. And so I've had to order more and more of these, and I want to point that out as an ideal item for Christmas present, for holidays, and as something educational, and it's something that could save your life, literally, could save your life. And if there's a planet, a pole shift, you can reconstruct the calendar and the new time using this device. Okay, enough of that, but also just remember my webpage, the water filter products, the unique items there besides my stainless steel and plastic gravity water filters. The unique items there are the pre-filter, which will filter out chemical radiation or oil out of your sludge water before you put it into your nice clean gravity water filter, or the modular filtration and storage system, up to 20 gallons and expandable. It's a filter and a storage system, so your water is stored in airtight, sealed containers. There's nothing like it on the market. Anyway, okay, enough of that. But I just want to promote these things because I feel they're so important. Anyway, okay, on with the main show here. Let me do a little this new release that's coming out at Christmas. I'm going to do a little more preparation of the public for this new release. Imagine if you could interact with, a lot of times you get a book, okay, you read it, you get information, that's great. Say you get like my photos, my CD photo of 110 high altitude aerial photos of the American Southwest. That's an interactive CD. You get 110 high resolution photos of the American Southwest, but what you can do is go in and look at areas in high detail. These are engineers use these, geologists use these, I had an experimental airplane of a friend of mine. We took off out of Los Angeles, I think the year was 2005, and we went up in pre-dawn, took off, and went up to high altitude, and my goal was as the sun came up over the southwestern desert, there was dust coming in from China, and it was at a high altitude, and I wanted to take a picture of that haze layer to get, and then also do a bit of chemical analysis, etc. And so anyway, we get up there, and there's the night sky all the way. We're at high altitude, so we're way up above the dense part of the Earth's atmosphere. And all of a sudden, the sun starts to rise, and we start snapping photos, and I'm getting the perfect photos of what I want. And all of a sudden, we realize that there's a high-pressure cell that's set into the entire American Southwest, and there's not a cloud. We have 1,000-mile viewing visibility over the entire American Southwest all the way to Denver. And I'm like, okay, this is an opportunity I am not going to pass up. How often do you get these kind of viewing conditions? So we start flying east, northeast, to Denver, and then follow a route right along that path from LA to Denver, snapping photos, overlapping photos of the entire American Southwest. So the camera is looking from perfectly straight down out of the aircraft and then north. And so you get the view. You can see Colorado. You can see the northern part. You can see the Rocky Mountains in northern Colorado. You can see the Green River, Utah area. You can see we start out snapping above Area 51 down in the American Southwest. We're coming across Nevada. So you can see the American Southwest. And so this is an interactive video. That's my point. And that's still for sale on my webpage. But my point is, when I got the reaction back from parents, when kids got this video, they dropped their video games. They forgot all about their video games and went in and looked at this CD and were able to look into detail in the American Southwest, see roads. You could see cars driving down the road, down on the highways. That's how detailed these photos are. And so anyway, all the way to Denver. And so amazing, but it's an interactive, and this is what I'm saying. Now, the new release that I'm going to release at Christmas is interactive. It's something you're going to, to me, it's an amazing reorganization of knowledge, and it's something that you can interact with. So anyway, and by the way, that's for sale on the webpage right now. You can get one or two of them. Two of them includes free shipping. But this, to me, is what makes me tick. Because in the background, I'm working on many things right now. I'm working on a new transportation, I'll just call it a device, that will allow basically free transportation. It's one of my goals, in my personal goals, is to provide free transportation by a car-like individual, a car-like vehicle, and also on the water, there are sailboats, of course, and that's basically free. You're using the wind. But what I'm working on is something that's a little more, let's say, it's a little, it's hard to describe. It uses the wind, but it's not a sailboat. Let me just put it that way. And so anyway, I'm working on that type of device. I'm working on a new energy system, and I'm working on a new system of purifying salt water to drinkable quality and usable for plants, etc. So at any rate, there's a lot that I'm working on in the background, but these releases, once they come out, they're timed so that I can distribute this information. Plus, it's a lot of work for me to create and develop just the release, so it's in a packaged form, so it's easily understandable by the public. And for example, the Calculate Primes book was a very difficult book to put out. It had a 3-hour DVD. I did a pre-release review by about 100 people who were trained engineers and mathematicians. And I realized that the book was too difficult for even some of them, so I put out the 3-hour DVD with the book. Tremendous amount of work that goes into these releases and planning them, so they're, once they get in your hands, they're usable, they're easy to use, they're easy to follow. And so anyway, that's the information I have about the release. This is the release that's coming up at Christmas time. I'm very excited about this. And as I said, it's a reorganization of a certain class of knowledge. Just a quick mention here. I saw an article this week. There's a new high-altitude spy plane coming out. It's called the SR-72, or Son of Blackbird, the SR-71. Many of you may be familiar with the Blackbird. Is a airplane that goes supersonic at very high altitudes, and it's used for reconnaissance. It takes pictures, high-definition pictures, and it's a military plane. It's so hot that they actually had to build it with the rivets loose in the metal. When the metal plates were riveted together, the rivets are actually loose because when it heats up, the metal expands, and then it tightens up. That's how the type of engineering that went into this. So that's a Cold War. The SR-71 was a Cold War reconnaissance spy plane. Now Lockheed is coming out with what they call SR-72, as if we need another hole in the head. Look, we can't afford to feed the people in this country. Their people are homeless. The economy is in shambles. The banking industry is in shambles. And Lockheed wants to come out with an SR-72 so they can, what, fly over Russia? We have satellites now. I mean, what are these people thinking? Excuse me for getting excited and outraged. What on earth is Lockheed thinking? Well, I can tell you what they're thinking. They got to come up with something to make some money. They got to pay for all those houses south of L.A., out north of San Diego, along that ridge up there, those beautiful million-dollar houses that overlook the ocean. They got to pay for those with something. So that's why they're coming out with the SR-72. Oh, they make me puke. Excuse me, but the California aerospace industry, if that would just sink right off into the ocean, I would be happy. If we could do it in a way that would spare the good people of California in that aerospace industry and all its people would just sink right into the ocean, that's what would make me happy. Excuse me, I better qualify that because I got a lot of good friends, a lot of great people out in L.A., in the coast over there. But as far as the aerospace industry is concerned, flush them down with you-know-what. This past Wednesday morning, I was a guest on the Joyce Riley show, and it was a very, very interesting show, I have to say that. We did a lot of discussion about current events. But at the very end, Joyce had a lot of callers calling in and asking questions, and she specifically wanted people that were crazy, that had crazy things to say. And of all the people that called in, they were all pretty normal as far as I can tell. But anyway, at the very end, a woman emailed or called in, and she said something about me saying that a green blob was on the way and was going to hit Earth. And so, I haven't said anything like that, but possibly the person was confused or combining other thoughts. So anyway, I wanted to clarify anything that I may have said that might have given a person this kind of implication. Unless there's some YouTube video out there or something that's using my name or something to say there's a green blob coming to Earth. I'm not aware of any green blob coming to Earth. But let me talk about something that I did say, that comet Isan is green. And so in a sense, it's a green blob. It's a green coma of the comet Isan, which is the energetic electron stream going through the comet, illuminating it like a light bulb. Okay, so that's green. But what I did say is that in January, mid-January, around the 14th, give or take a few days, plus or minus a few days in January, 2014, comet Isan will be up and above us, actually behind us in position in the solar system, and we will have a direct linear electrical alignment between Jupiter, comet Isan, which will not be in the ecliptic at that time. It'll be up and above us, but still a good possibility of an electrical connection there, connecting all the way out to Jupiter. And of course, Jupiter electrically connects way out in the solar system. Okay, so now come in, we have Earth. So in summary, we have Jupiter, comet Isan, Earth's new moon passing, and the planet Venus, all in a perfect electrical alignment. So we have a cross solar system electrical alignment that extends from the sun all the way out way, way beyond the orbit of Jupiter. And this means that little Earth will be trapped in there. Plus we have a new moon, and when that new moon passes, that's when we get that jolt, that trigger that could set off hurricanes, etc. And I said the one thing that if this trigger mechanism goes out and gives Isan a jolt, we could connect into the tail of Isan. It could jump over to Earth, so to speak, And if ISON is connecting out towards the region around Jupiter, which is full of sulfur dioxide, that material then would could potentially come into our upper atmosphere. And we would see something that we have not seen in thousands of years. The ancients talk about this. It's called the Red Hand of Death. And not that anybody's going to die. That's the term that was used by the ancients. And the reason they used it was because when Venus came by, Venus was connecting. It was a huge comet, much, much bigger than ISON, but it was connecting out to that region of Jupiter, drawing in sulfur dioxide. And when we connected, we actually, Earth was gravitationally bigger than the nucleus of Venus, the comet, and we won the tug of war, so to speak, of that tail material, and it rained the hydrocarbons, the oil, the naphtha, the meteor streams. And this is what the ancients talk about the hailstone, the brimstone, and fire coming out of the sky, and the Red Hand of Death, which was the sulfur dioxide coming in and then bleeding down like fingers in the atmosphere, and probably combined also with red auroras and other types of auroral activity. So all of this combined gave a very eerie view up in the upper atmosphere, not to mention foul weather. Okay, so at any rate, I said there is a possibility I'll bite remote. A remote possibility that that could happen. And so when I make these predictions, I'm qualifying it. For example, this coming week with Comet ISON coming up behind planet Mercury, I said there's the possibility that Mercury would go comet. It would be visibly turned into a comet. In other words, develop a comet tail. And so when you make these predictions, there are all kinds of factors. But I make them, I mention these when there's a good possibility of it happening. When I talked about ISON interacting with Mars, wow, it's hard to say which factors we're going to see, but we did. We saw, first of all, Comet ISON turned green. That meant that that became very energetic. The electron stream passing through it became very energetic. Then it developed a sunward spike. Then it interacted with Mars, and Mars went comet. Mars developed a soft halo around it. You could actually see it with the naked eye, and very well with binoculars or a small telescope or photos. I've seen many, many photos now where people have actually taken a picture of Mars and Comet ISON together, and Mars has a distinctive halo around it. And then afterwards, people would take the picture of Mars in the same scenario a night or two afterwards, and there was no halo. And so, very clearly, Mars went comet. So my predictions there were 100% verified. And so when I talk about the planet Mercury going comet, there's a good possibility. There's nothing guaranteed, but I give these because there's a good possibility, and it's worth getting up early to go see. Okay, so just a quick Comet ISON review before I get into the main science topic. Comet ISON this week, okay, starting the 10th, which is, let me make sure, Sunday night. Get up Monday morning early if you can, and around about 4 in the morning, and start identifying the planet Mercury coming up on the eastern horizon. Now, it comes up just before dawn. Mercury is the closest planet to the sun, and the up above it, in fact, from your vantage point in the northern hemisphere, I assume most of the people we're dealing with here in the northern hemisphere, directly above it will be Comet ISON. And at this point, Comet ISON is just about barely naked eye visible, but you'd be better off to have a good set of binoculars, astronomical binoculars, on a tripod. Don't try and handhold binoculars. At this point, you should start to see Comet ISON and then the planet Mercury, and observe them. Observe where they are. Over the next couple days, Comet ISON is going to move closer and closer, in other words, down and down and down towards the planet Mercury. And they will be if you take a direct line from where the sun normally comes up, go through directly through Mercury and then out a little bit beyond, and that's where you'll see Comet Ison. And Comet Ison daily will progress closer and closer directly in that line to the planet Mercury. And around the 13th and the 14th, that's going to be Wednesday and Thursday, that's when we could see the activity where Comet Ison could brighten, become bigger, become possibly turn from a green comet into a different color, like a blue comet. We could see the planet Mercury go comet, in other words, develop a haze, a coma, or even a comet tail. And we could also see, at this point, the sun start to become active with solar flaring. By the way, NASA has over 60 instruments trained on Comet Ison and this whole process. They know 100% well that I am perfectly correct in everything I'm telling you. But do you know what? Not a shred, not a single photo, not a shred of data is coming to the public or any public source regarding those 60 instruments and telescopes all trained on Comet Ison. This is the most outrageous misuse of public facilities that I have ever seen. It is criminal what's going on. And then you have places like spaceweather.com or other web pages for amateurs posting amateur photos that are fuzzy, out of focus. I was explaining to people that when you take a picture with a telescope of a comet, you have to have a tracking equipment that follows the comet because the comet is moving with respect to the stars. So what we see are the amateur photos that are tracking the stars, not the comet. So the stars are not blurred or streaked. The stars are not streaked in these photos, indicating that the amateurs don't know or don't have the equipment to track the comet, if you understand what I mean. So the comet, which is normally kind of a smudge anyway, is just this long smudge, and it gives you no details. And, of course, you have atmospheric conditions. So what they're posting, instead of posting real good, serious photos from big telescopes, from the New Mexico Ison telescope that's run by Russia in New Mexico, or having photos from these places, we don't have a single photo from any place that's legitimate. And I have to respect amateurs. They do very good work. But when it comes to these details, when we're looking for Comet Ison, we're looking for sunward spikes, we're looking for Mercury going comet, we need professional equipment that will can give us serious details. NASA is getting this data, and they're hiding it from you, the public. So at any rate, it's just criminal. What's going on here is actually criminal. These people should be arrested and put in prison. But the one thing is that you, the public, can get up and see this for yourself. A lot of people saw Mars go comet, and so I'm hoping that my prediction comes true here, that the conditions are correct and we actually see the planet Mercury go comet, and then the resulting solar flaring start to kick in. The sun has had a few minor little flare issues here. It had an X3 flare the other night, but very short-lived. So basically the sun has not had much flaring at all. So if all of a sudden we start to see a lot of flaring here, then it is obviously a result of Comet Ison interaction with Mercury and the sun, and that's what's kicking off. Then Ison continues to move in towards the sun, and we should probably see a good deal of flaring at that point. Will this affect Earth? Well, I'm going to try and keep an update as much as possible during that time frame and try and see if any of these flares would be Earth-directed or result in any kind of weather or auroras or whatever on Earth. But I doubt highly that any of this would be sufficient for an electrical power outage. I want to remind you something, the story that I broke late this summer, about the NERC, the North American Electrical Reliability Corporation, planned simulated power outage this coming November 13th and 14th. Obama has called November the month for national preparation for infrastructure preparedness. Janet Napolitano, in her speech leaving Homeland Security, said we have in our future, in our near future, imminent power outage and cyber attack. And so what I'm seeing is in November, this is not my prediction, I'm just reading all the indicators. You have many senators, like Senator Trent Lott, saying that we are in store for an imminent power outage due to EMP or cyber attack or due to solar flaring. Where do these people get this information? Obviously, they have something planned. They know something that we don't know. So all I'm telling people is be prepared to take care of yourselves. And this is something I've been talking about. Many talk show hosts have been talking about becoming prepared. Be prepared. That's all I can tell you. Be prepared, because the time, is, from what I can tell, is now. If you have... And this is a strange thing to say, but I would say if you have money in the bank, get it all out. Go to the bank and take it all out. And that's a recommendation. I don't like saying things like that, but that's all I can tell you. I can't tell you. I would not advise people to leave money in a bank, because you might come one day and it's going to be closed. And the possibly a whole new banking system being ushered in. So these are the indicators. It's, I hate to talk about stuff like this, but I would not want to leave my good audience out there without a proper warning. And by the way, this is not me predicting this. This is a lot of government officials saying this. So I'm just repeating what they're saying and telling you that I think these people got something up their sleeve. Something's coming. Be prepared. Can't make it any more clear than that. Okay, finally on to the main science topic. This is a very, very interesting passage, and as I introduced this at the beginning of the show, I picked up the Colburn, I was moving some books around and stuff, and I just flipped open the Colburn and to this page, and I started reading, and I said, I gotta discuss this on this week's show. Here's the scenario. In the past, I have said that Planet X will look like a large raging comet. Well, to a lot of people, they don't really identify with that, because a comet, if you're familiar with what they look like, it's got a tail, a nice composite tail, and basically that's it. That's the public's view of what a comet is. Okay, if we have a Planet X-type object, meaning its nucleus is larger, much larger, like planet size, and it's discharging the solar capacitor, like from, you know, near the Sun all the way out to Saturn, like the big comets do, the ones that fill up the entire sky. These babies are interacting with objects. They're, okay, say it's coming through the asteroid belt. It's going to be zapping electrical discharges out to all of these. It's going to look like a fiery monster with its hair standing on edge as it shoots out electrical, connects electrically to these bodies which are not as highly charged. Okay, so it's going to look like, you know, the guy that stands up on a chair and puts his hand on a Van de Graaff ball, you know, that ball that charges up to a high voltage, and all his hair stands on end. That's what a comet would look like. Okay, so it's not going to look like your average little poofball run-of-the-mill comet. Right now we see Comet Ison is a green comet. And by the way, just an aside note, when NASA announced Comet Ison would be the comet of the century, what were they thinking? What on earth were they thinking? This is a little teeny comet. And when they were talking about the comet of the century, after a while, I explained this on the Joyce Riley show, that I in historically, traditionally in the astronomy community within NASA, they're very conservative about announcing anything big or out of the ordinary, especially when it comes to comets. They don't want to, because in historically there have been people who, I think it was Kohoutek, was supposed to be a huge comet, and the astronomers that made that prediction were ostracized greatly, lost tremendous amount of respect in their field because they had made a prediction that didn't come true. And I think that's a bunch of phony baloney, a bunch of guys with their nose up in the air, downtroddening the guys who made that prediction. So what? They were wrong. But anyway, since then, NASA and the astronomy community has been more than extremely conservative regarding comet predictions. So when NASA came out and said this would be the comet of the century, I thought they gotta have a tremendous amount of data that supports this. And as it turns out, they didn't, which makes me wonder why NASA made this announcement. And so I made some calculations, and I said, well, according to their description here, by the time it gets to Mars, Mars will be engulfed in the atmosphere of Comet Ison. It's only 7 million miles away, the encounter of Comet Ison with Mars. So clearly, Mars could have some atmospheric conditioning, and there could be electrical discharge between the comet. We could see possibly the volcanoes being snapped with electrical discharges and going off. These events could happen. These are possibilities. But then Comet Ison didn't pan out. So around last April, I think it was, I finally said, hey, NASA boys, you know, we're looking at this Comet Ison, and it ain't the comet of the century. It's nowhere near. It's a little teeny comet. What's all of the hoopla about? And so at that point, I started to address what Comet Ison really was. And I said, yeah, it's going to interact with Mars, but it's not going to be this big interaction that would be based on NASA's prediction of this comet of the century stuff. Okay, so anyway, I just wanted to clarify that. But, okay, so what would a big comet? We're talking about a big nucleus. The big nuclei discharge the solar capacitor to a greater degree because they have more surface area. They charge up more. They create a bigger discharge. So physically, okay, we have an immense tail that spans 200-300 million miles compared to a little one that might span 30,000 or 50,000 miles. We have a highly charged nucleus on the big comet, the Planet X-type comet, that's shooting out, connecting electrically with every little rock and pebble in the solar system as it passes through, and through the meteor, through the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. So it looks like this kind of fiery monster up there, and it wouldn't look like your average comet. Little nice little comet with a nice little swooping white tail or green tail, even if it's energetic. So anyway, I want to read this passage, given that, and then I'm going to talk about some of the physics of what causes these objects to look this way. Okay, once again, this is regarding the destroyer. This is actually, if you have a Colburn, it's from page 189. This is the real Colburn. And if you have been conned into buying the Colburn off of Amazon.com, send it back and get your money back and get the real Colburn from the Chaldean Trust in New Zealand. I believe their webpage directs you to where you can purchase a real copy of the Colburn, K-O-L-B-R-I-N. Okay, this is the once again, the title of this, Chapter 5, The Destroyer. From the scroll of Adifa, from the scroll of Adifa, and once again, Adifa is historian from long before thousands of years ago. Okay, so I'm going to read directly here without stopping. The doom shape called the destroyer in Egypt was seen in all the lands thereabouts. In color, it was bright and fiery, in appearance changing and unstable. It twisted about itself like a coil, like water bubbling into a pool from an underground supply, and all men agree it was the most fearsome sight. It was not a great comet or a lucent star, but more like a fiery body of flame. Okay, so here's the part that I want to just break out for a second from the text. They say it was not a great comet. And okay, it was not one of the just normal big comets with a white tail moving through the through space. This thing looked like a wild monster up there. So they didn't identify it as a normal comet, in which it wasn't. It was a monster comet. And this is what I want to get at. Okay, I'll read on without stopping. Its movements on high were slow. And excuse me, just one other thing. Remember, they thought that these were in the atmosphere. Okay, reading again. Its movements on high were slow, but it swirled in a manner of smoke, and it remained close to the sun, whose face it hid. There was a bloody redness about it, which changed as it passed along its course. That, by the way, that's the sulfur dioxide from Jupiter, the region of Jupiter. Okay, I'm sorry, I'll continue reading. It caused death and destruction in its rising and setting. It swept the earth with gray cinder rain. It caused many plagues, hunger, and other evils. It bit the skin of men and beasts until they became mottled with sores. The earth was troubled and shook. The hills and mountains moved and rocked. The dark smoke-filled heavens bowed over earth, and a great howl came to the ears of living men, borne to them upon the wings of the wind. It was the cry of the Dark Lord, the Master of Dread. Thick clouds of fiery smoke passed before him, and there was an awful hail of hot stones and coals of fire. The doom shape thundered sharply in the heavens and shot out bright lightnings. The channels of water were turned back unto themselves when the land tilted, and great trees were tossed about and snapped like twigs. Then a voice like 10,000 trumpets was heard over the wilderness, and before its burning breath the flames parted. The whole of the land moved and mountains melted. The sky itself roared like 10,000 lions in agony, and bright arrows of blood sped back and forth across its face. Earth swelled up like a bread upon the hearth. This was the aspect of the doom shape called the Destroyer, when it appeared in days long gone by in olden times. And it is thus described in the old records, few of which remain. It is said that when it appears in the heavens above, earth splits open from the heat, like a nut roasted before the fire. Then flames shoot up through the surface and leap about like fiery fiends upon black blood. The moisture inside the land is all dried up. The pastures and civilized places are consumed in flames, and all trees become white ashes. The doom shape is like a circling ball of flame which scatters small fiery offspring in its train. It covers about a fifth part of the sky and sends writhing snake-like fingers down to earth. Before it, the sky appears frightened and it breaks up and scatters away. Midday is no brighter than night. It spawns a most horrible. It spawns a host of terrible things. These are things said of the Destroyer in the old records. Read them with solemn heart, knowing that the doom shape had its appointed time and will return. It would be foolish to let them go unheeded. Now men say such things are not destined for our days. May the great God above grant that to be so. But come, the day surely will, and in accordance with his nature, man will be unprepared. Wow. Excuse me, but wow. That is incredible. I want you to all go back and listen to the archive of this show because you gotta listen to that about two or three times. Now, the point that I'm gonna make here is to describe what they're talking about. Let me go through a couple of these passages. It says, it twisted about itself like a coil, like bubbling, like water bubbling into a pool from an underground supply. Okay, the twisting of the coil is the electrical currents that are coiled in the magnetic field. This is very typical of electromagnetic currents in a magnetic field. It says, it below it swirled in a manner of smoke, and it remained close to the sun whose face it hid. Okay, so it hid the sun, the tail material blocked out the light of the sun. It says, it swept the earth with gray cinder rain and caused many plagues, hunger and evil, that it bit the skin of men and beasts until they became mottled with sores. So it burned these fine pieces of ash and rock, burnt into the skins of men and beasts alike. It says, the earth was troubled and shook, the hills and mountains moved and rocked. These are the earthquakes, the gravity wave that's coming from this object coming near Earth. These are the gravity effects. It says, the doom shape thundered sharply in the heavens and shot out bright lightnings. This is what I was telling you. Every object up there, every piece of little rock in the sky, this thing is shooting out electrical discharges to every little thing. It looks like a fiery monster blasting off at everything. And now a regular comet is not going to do this because it's sheathed electrically and magnetically. But the bigger comets just break. They have a much bigger sheath, and they encompass a much bigger area, thus the shooting out of electricity to all of these objects. It says, then a voice like 10,000 trumpets was heard over the wilderness. This is the tremendous trumpeting noise that comes from the shrill of the electrical discharges passing through the atmosphere. It says, bright arrows of blood sped back and forth across its face. We see similar types of electrical discharging when we see a volcano, a plume above a volcano erupting. And lastly, it says, it covers about a fifth part of the sky and sends writhing snake-like fingers down to Earth. Those are the electrical discharges. Moses talked about that, the swirling tornado of fires extending up into the sky, when he talked about the Venus event. Okay, I'm out of time here. We'll be back again next week with a report on Comet Ison and what it was doing at that time. Remember to get up early starting Sunday and go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Remember the new release, What the Japanese Want to Know About Planet X, and then also the other new release that's coming out at Christmas time. A lot going on today. So stay tuned. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.